Hello, welcome to Every Woman. This is Marvita Oliver, and you're here on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm very glad to introduce our next guest. She's a highly awarded and distinguished associate professor of the UMKC system. Prior to joining the University of Kansas City, University of Missouri, Kansas City, she held positions at Sprint, Advanced Technology Labs, and the University of Minnesota, Duluth as a postdoctoral researcher and as a 3M McKnight Distinguished Visiting Assistant Professor. She's published 3 books on network monitoring, storage systems, and cloud computing. She's been a faculty fellow of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA as we're used to, U.S. Air Force Research Laboratory's Visiting Faculty Research Program, and she's a Korea Telecom's Advanced Institute of Technology member. So while she's has a long list that I did not even try to read the rest of distinguished technical credentials, she also actively supports women in technology and is currently involved in a program to deliver IT training to women who are incarcerated on how to use computers. And she's currently interested in crypto technology and perhaps even possibly bringing that to the education system at UMKC. So I just want to welcome Ms. Baekhyun Choi, Dr. Baekhyun Choi. So very glad to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you, Marvita. Thanks for the nice introduction. Excited to be here.
Thank you. You know, Ms. Dr. Choi, I met you through a friend of mine and your graduate assistant.
KC City, right.
Yes. She's a KKFI host of Global Roots, Helen Gebra-Mlek, and we met in a Toastmasters class. But she told me about some of the things that you've been interested in. I think I went to a conference that you helped to chair before, and I actually was involved in the last conference that you recently were a part of, and that's the Smart Cities Conference. Mm-hmm. I've kept my eye and ear on you, and I've kept attuned to what you're doing and getting involved in. And I just really think that you're involved in some of the really interesting things that can help to develop and change our city. And I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So one of the first things I'd like to ask you about, you were recently involved in the IEEE Smart Cities Conference, mm-hmm. as a co-organizer. How did you get chosen to organize this conference?
Right, the IEEE International Smart City Conference was, mm-hmm. held September 16th to 19th. And in fact, a group of people at UMKC and City and KC Digital Drive, we planned together a few years ago to apply to IEEE to be selected as one of the core smart cities. And we were lucky enough to be chosen. And as one of the activities, we were, you know, get to host this international conference.
How does Kansas City make it as a core city in the IEEE Smart Cities?
Right. There's a lot of buzzword around the smart cities, and there are the Global Smart City Initiative, Barcelona, London, and those places. The Kansas City may not be one of them, but still, Kansas City is a shining example where the real and challenging and meaningful work is done in the city. And I think all the community effort that we are doing, and also the government, city government leadership all together, I think that made a distinction to be chosen by IEEE.
Because when you look at it, there's so many other cities, New York, San Francisco.
Right.
Yeah, and for Kansas City to stand out as one of the cities that could be the host of such an important conference, I was a volunteer at your conference, and I was like, glad to be there. There were so many people from all over the world. I was really impressed at how many people came to the conference.
Yeah, we had about 330 delegates from 17 different countries. Mm. Right. And Kansas City is one of the five IEEE core smart cities, and other cities include Guadalajara, Mexico, Wuxi, China, Trento, Italy, and Casablanca, Morocco.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So once you were involved with that, what was the goal that you and the committee had in bringing together participants from around the world to come to this conference here in Kansas City?
Right. So there are a lot of IEEE technical conferences. This is a very unique conference for the smart cities, where the people involved, the stakeholders, are just so broad, not computer scientists, electrical engineers, not only that, beyond the civil engineers, mechanical engineers, and the policymakers, infrastructure operators, you know, the government officials, and so on. So we wanted to bring multiple stakeholders together to share the knowledge and discuss the state of art and the plan, the next advancement.
Mm-hmm. And in doing this, how difficult or easy was this task for you?
I think this was my, I have organized workshops and other meetings before, mm-hmm. but I think this was the most difficult or challenging task, mm-hmm. in a sense that the stakeholders are so broad, as I said before. So I have to find out, you know, who are the players, who are working on, you know, which area around the smart cities technology, and convincing them this is going to be the wonderful venue to get together. So it was a really big, challenging task indeed.
Well, one thing I'd like to do before we go any further is just wanted to introduce some of the other folks in the room, and that's Una Noling, who's producing the show on the board, and Fiona Noling. Both of these ladies have backgrounds in technology as well, and so we're hoping to have a nice dialogue going on mm-hmm. with you today. So,
yes. I just want to add more on the previous comment, though it was challenging, I was lucky enough to have a group of people, you know, to work together, my co-chair and the local steering committee, organizational committee, and the technical program committee members. So, yeah, it was really collective, collaborative effort.
I would imagine it would have to be, because, like you said, it was such a broad spectrum of interest. And so
sure.
to be able to even identify people, you know, the key stakeholders to come to the conference. I think it seemed to me that the people who came to the table of registration, they were very glad to be there. So I think you did a good job in selecting people, just from my point of view.
Thank you. And one more, you know, acknowledgement to the volunteers like
yes.
you know, really helped the meeting to go smoothly.
Well, you had some great volunteers, I have to say, because the people I met, I was like, wow, this is, you know, these guys really go out of their way to help people and make them feel comfortable in Kansas City.
Right.
And I think
I'm
that's something we're learning to welcome people to our city. So, yeah,
exactly.
It was a great opportunity. Well, where will the conference be held next year?
So this event, Kansas City event, was the fourth of the offering. And there are five core smart cities in the world, as I said earlier. So next event, the only city that hasn't held it yet is Casablanca, Morocco.
Oh, okay. So. And do they know what the goals will be for that conference?
So this year the theme was a, you know, systems approach for smarter communities. And the next year the location and the location is decided. Organization committee is being formed. So the particular theme is, I don't think it's decided yet. However. I know that their direction, they are looking for the smart city technologies, particularly for frugal city.
Frugal city.
Yeah.
What is a frugal city?
I think that Casablanca is that's the term they have used. I believe it is about how to make the system, the city operation in a more efficient and
okay.
effective manner.
Okay. Were there any insights that you took away from this conference in particular?
Well, so many.
Any that you feel you can share with us?
Just that, you know, the smart city, the technology, when we say as I alluded earlier, it involves so broad technologies, right? But we know that the how to integrate them together in a meaningful way, it's going to be a big issue to make the approach successful or not. And also we realized some important technologies in the next step of the smart city, like, you know, 5G and the blockchain.
I noticed one thing that you guys talked about in the theme of the conference is that you're wanting to focus on the system, how you maintain an appreciation. Even though you're focusing on the system, you want to maintain appreciation for the people within the system as complex and unique individuals with desperate values rather than simply as nodes in a network. And one of the questions that you were asking is, how do we balance the opportunity for shared efficiency with the heightened risk of linking things together? And I think that's part of what people want to know. We're people, but we realize this is where things are going. How do you keep the people important in the broad spectrum of where things are going these days?
I think that's a grand challenge. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, you know, human dynamics. It's hard to anticipate, or you don't know. You know, it's not as clear as some math or, you know, the algorithms. But knowing the importance of the human aspect in the system, I think that's the important factor. People have to keep that in mind when developing technologies. I think as people try and, you know, find things out through the trial and errors, I think it's evolving what would be the best way to involve people, process, and data.
Is there an example that you can give us that stands out as, and you know, how we can kind of get a handle on the type of thing you're talking about? As far as, you know, bringing...
Well, there must be a lot. Let me see. Policeman's body cam camera, you know, it's a new technology, but the people have a resistance in using it or processing it. So what would be the best way, or what would be how to exploit the technology in a most meaningful and effective way, it's... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not clear.
I see.
Right.
Okay. And if just wanting to keep moving along. Overall, what would you say to the next conference organizers to encourage them or let them know what they might be in for?
So this is the really non-traditional conference where the stakeholders are, you know, the expected, or we know, you know, who are the main members. So there were a lot of challenges I am discussing with the next, you know, organizers, the challenges we had, and also, you know, the things to improve in the conference organization.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the communication, and I'm going to also involved in the next year organization.
You'll be involved.
Not as a general chair, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure that's going to be good. Can you tell me what impact or how important it is for the city government to be a part of these types of conferences?
Oh, this is, they are, the our city is one of the main, you know, the stakeholder or the organizers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For example, our city mayor gave a welcome remark.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Along with UNKC Chancellor Dr. Molly Agrawal.
So that just goes to show how committed Kansas City is to the smart city initiatives that are around the city then?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. We also had the Kansas City Chief Innovation Officer, you know, giving remarks in different meetings, mm-hmm. Inside the conference. A lot of part of planning was with the help of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Showcasing Kansas City as a smart city, like a tour and other social programs. Yeah.
And what were some of the features that were showcased in Kansas City?
In the tour, Kansas mm-hmm. City tour,
yes,
we
ma'am.
Had a streetcar, and also we visited, you know, tech startup, you know, the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And
could you explain how the streetcar is an example of it being a smart city? How is it connected? How does that count as smart for anyone that doesn't know, that just gets on and rides it?
Right. So every place when we go to a meeting that involves in the smart city, what is a smart city, you know, what are the examples? The people are asking, that means, you know, people can come up with a different definitions. But the general agreement is that it's an urban planning vision where the information and communication technology and IoT technology are integrated to facilitate better the insight into and control over the systems where the residents can be impacted.
And engaged in the city.
Right.
So for the streetcar, is there an app that people can track how far away it is so they know when to turn up at stops and wait for it, or so controllers can see whether it's running late, or how does that make it a smart streetcar?
So the better transportation, the facilitated by the technology, right? So the waiting time, the waiting time anticipation, planning of the travel itself, and just the improving quality of life of the residents through technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, I wanted to just cover that smart city because I felt like it was, how well was it attended? Were there any people, was it attended well by people within Kansas City as well?
Yes, we did have a well-balanced mm-hmm. delegates from mm-hmm. Kansas City as well as the international participants.
Okay.
As mentioned, about the 330 mm-hmm. people from different 17 countries,
mm-hmm.
right? And we did have a plenary session all days in the morning, like two keynotes per day in the morning, and the plenary panel. We also had lunch keynote by industrial speakers mm-hmm. on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then afternoon, we had the four parallel sessions.
Did you have any sessions on how to get funding for doing this, whether it can pay for itself in cost savings or getting business?
Exactly. We had four co-located workshops, and one of them was National Science Foundation's Smart and Connected Community Aspiring PIA workshop. So that workshop is to discuss what is the, first of all, what is the Smart and Connected Community Program by NSF, and how do you get funded by the program?
Mm-hmm.
So we had people from the current PIs, principal investigators, what their projects are about, and also the challenges they had or the strategy they had to do the proposal and get awarded.
Is the funding issue something that you've been able to handle very well, or how do you find that situation?
Funding is all academics, challenge. Right, it's always scarce and yeah, it's always challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you want to ask anything else about the smart cities?
I was going to ask, unless I fell asleep during a blizzard last year and dreamed it. I seem to remember a website where you can actually watch the Kansas City, Missouri snowplows moving around so you can see how they're making progress through your neighborhood. Am I misremembering? The snowplows, how they're clearing the streets so that mm-hmm. you can track as they're getting closer.
Cool.
Am I remembering that right?
That would be a good idea.
I thought I remembered seeing that website last year, but I think that would be... must really help with people with the frustration when they're sitting there and they don't see any sign of anything, so but they can see that progress is being made, so it will reduce everyone's stress.
Right. Yeah.
So that's part of Smart City initiatives as well?
Smart City technologies that we can have. So we do have a Waze and the Google Map that shows the current traffic conditions, but not about the snow conditions yet, mm-hmm. I guess.
This was how the snowplows were moving around the city. Mm-hmm. They had the little tracking things.
Well, I could, the Smart City Initiative, I think, is something that I was very proud that Kansas City was able to be a part of. And but to go a little bit further, I'd like to know a little bit more about you. How did you get into this profession? How did you choose this? Well, did you you're not from here, where are you from?
I was born and raised in South Korea, mm-hmm. and I chose computer science in late 80s, when computer science is not much known. I was lucky to be exposed to see a computer, personal computer, in my high school. So I was fascinated by that. I loved math and science, but I wanted to do something beyond just more of the thinking or just memorizing. So this is some area I thought it's very, very creative. It requires creativity, mm-hmm. and I have to keep learning that that's a great thing.
Is this something
I wanted to pursue?
Is this something that young women were going into when you were going into it, or was this something that you were doing and maybe not so many women?
I didn't pay attention to what others were interested in. Uh-huh. And certainly it wasn't, the women were minority looking back, mm-hmm. All the time. I think that throughout my profession,
I see.
Yes, yeah, the women are minority in, mm-hmm. in this area, STEM area.
But in South Korea itself, I understand that South Korea is very advanced in these types of areas. Is that who would be the
these
best
days,
way you
right.
would,
yeah. yeah. These days that is true. And you do see more, I believe, we can see more women in undergrad. Mm. But still, if you stay in the industry long enough, I don't think we have enough women yet.
Ah, okay. Well, that's something that we're all working on.
Yes.
Okay. Well, when you got into IT, is it something that you would recommend to other women?
Absolutely. This is a... I'm a lifelong learner, and this is some area. These are always exciting things happen, and you learn something new. And also, being in the research area, you also get to, produce new knowledge as well. Mm-hmm. So it is just an intellectually very, very intriguing area.
Yeah. And is this something other members of your family are involved in as well?
Oh, not at all. In fact, I'm the only one.
Okay.
The one interesting episode is that I have a sister who is really the outgoing extrovert, and I was the opposite. And I was working on computer, and one time she said, "Oh, you are good that you are working with computer. You work with, better than people you work with computer. It's more comfortable to you."
And then here you are leading conferences and on the radio and doing all this stuff.
Now I have to go outside of my comfort zone, and my profession is really teaching computer science as well, and they really enjoy that.
But a lot of teachers, when I taught, they were fine standing up all day in front of their classes. But if they had to stand up for 2 minutes in front of their peers and other teachers and talk about an issue or something, they wanted to fall through the floor. It's a very different mindset presenting to your peers than presenting to your students. Do you find that, or do you find it it's the same or just a different challenge?
I didn't think about the difference much.
Well,
being a teacher, I think it keeps remind me to think about, you know, better ways to explain things. Think about analogies, you know, for example, and that also helps me, you know, being a good, better mom, and also being a parent. Helps me to become a better teacher as well.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. So you're a mother and a parent. I mean, a mother and a wife. How does that dynamic work for you as a associate professor at UMKC, such a busy woman with so many different things going on? How does that
It's always chaotic, mm-hmm. right? So I have two daughters, one in college, one in fourth grade. Especially when they were younger, it has been always hectic. But I think one of the real fortunate thing is that I have a supportive husband.
Mm-hmm.
He understands the complexity or dynamics of my profession. So I think that really helps a lot.
And what profession is he in?
He's currently a professor at the UMKC in the same department as well.
So
he used to be teaching at Texas A&M University and came back, came to Kansas City to join us.
I'm sure there's plenty of challenges that go along with having two UMKC professors. Is there anything that you can offer as a encouragement to other women who might be out there in the same type of situation?
Having a husband who understands, you know, the type of work that I'm doing, it's really the main factor that I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And also, being in the same, you know, the field, mm-hmm. we understand the jokes better for each other. And we have many common friends, so mm-hmm. it's a... I would encourage that.
Well, I hear they say that
other people.
I hear they say that the successful marriages happen, or one of the measures of successful marriages is the people get to celebrate the successful moments together. Mm-hmm. So, and I guess, you know, yeah, you have fun celebrating, hey, we won, you know, together, you know, and that seems to be something that helps to join marriages and keep them strong. Is that something that you found to be true in your own marriage?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah. So, you know, not that we do a lot of technical discussion at home, mm-hmm. Oftentimes at school through the meeting involving students, but our collaboration when it's recognized through mm-hmm. say awards, of course it's a big celebration.
And yes. Do you actually do research studies and projects together, or do you tend to do separate ones but just provide each other support because you're both in the same field?
Do we have both? I mean, we have our own separate projects, and there are, you know, projects that we have a common interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was wondering, how many students are you involved with, or how many, like, what are your class sizes and types?
I am teaching two courses this semester, mm-hmm. Network Architecture 1 and Cloud Computing, and one is about 40 students, and the other one is... a little less than 20.
Mm-hmm. And are these graduate students or undergraduate?
Yes, they are, you know, grad courses.
Okay, and how have you liked this type of situation, teaching graduate courses over maybe some undergraduate courses? Is that something?
I do teach undergrad course as well.
Oh, okay.
Often, typically once a year. And I enjoy teaching them both, and it's a really different kind of preparation mm-hmm. or a different kind of dynamics in the class.
Okay. One thing I was wondering about is, what are some of your other interests outside of the smart cities and what you're doing with your graduate courses?
So smart city, the word has emerged relatively in recent years. Mm-hmm. So my research interest is basically computer networking and communications and cloud computing. And its application, it's as I said, as a smart cities. Uh-huh. And when I say network, the computer networking and communication, in terms of algorithm protocol aspect and also the security system aspect as well. Mm-hmm.
Can you say something briefly about the security aspect and how crucial, or what do you have to say about security these days?
So security area is hot in these days. When internet was born, it was small and among the just closed group with an innocent mind, and with the popularity of internet, the usage of this system or the network is out of the control, and oftentimes, the security is considered after the thought on each of the existing systems. Mm-hmm. And these days, we are putting security from the design in new algorithms and protocols. However, still, it's a chicken and egg game. Whenever hackers breach into the special the issues, mm-hmm. then we have to come up with a new scheme.
Yeah.
I know that various cars have already been proven to be hackable to either make them brake and slow down or to flood the sensors so that they can't tell whether they're correctly in the lane and things like that now. How about so many people are turning their houses over to the whole house systems? So, if someone hated you, they could turn your AC system on to full blast in the middle of the winter or something, or turn your heating on full blast and run up your bills, or make your fish die from it being too hot or whatever. So what about controls and...
Wow, you've really put some diabolical thought into this, haven't you?
Oh, whoa.
I would never do that to fish. But if you don't have any pets, it might suffer.
Kind of reminds me of a science fiction story I read recently, or a near science fiction story, where hackers had released a virus that did these sorts of things to smart homes, and they named it Poltergeist,
That would be a good name for it. It would have that effect. Turn all your lights on and off and weird things.
Mm. In fact, a lot of the security research is starting from the hacker's mind. What could go wrong, mm-hmm. right? So, a lot of concerns people may have. It's the opportunity for researchers, and there are so many opportunities or concerns. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
does it take a special type of person to go down the trail of what a hacker, might be looking into, or is that something people are trained in schools, or is that something that they learn more so on their own?
At the moment, I think in university education, we are trying to put the security more into the curriculum, but it hasn't been that systematic yet, and a lot of room for improvement. Mm-hmm. So, I think the for now, most of the game is when things happen,
you
try
respond.
To,
I thought for a second you were asking if people had to have an inherently evil mindset, like Una accused me of my comment, to be able to think of these things, to work out how to block them in advance.
right. So really, the having inherent, the black mind, that one is the... We can incorporate that into the curriculum, right?
Train that mindset and that watchfulness.
Right. At least it's getting better than before, because we had a lot of exposures of the attacks and issues. We can bring that into the classroom and some of the solutions to address those. I think there we can do more to make the approach more systematic.
Is it pretty specific these days then? You have to kind of be in the environment that was hacked to kind of know what type of how to combat that type of situation routinely. Like if somebody gets hacked, do you pretty much have to be in the company to know what the disruption was and then learn how to attack it? Or are you guys trying to train students so that they can anticipate these types of situations and prevent them before they happen?
There are the many known traditional type of attacks, and mm-hmm. and there are solutions to them, and we can teach students the known attacks, known issues, and solutions, right? But oftentimes we get the new type of attack, and it's mostly through the commercial product, popular product, mm-hmm. and they're the one, say Microsoft, they are going to be the one who can have the quick handle on right. the solutions.
Mm-hmm. How good are companies when they get an attack aimed at their specific technology? How good are they at sharing the information that they've been attacked so other people can watch out for that? Or do they try and keep it really close and secret to their chest because it would be a bad public image? Do you think?
Good question. In the initial time, in the earlier times, it was a bad publicity, but these days we know that the attacks happened and failures happen mm-hmm. every day, multiple times. So how fast to respond to that, I think that's the
mm-hmm. yeah, because another thing I was just thinking of is hospitals. A lot of them now have system-wide networks, and people can just program in the drugs for your IV from a central station, mm-hmm. and it goes through. And if someone hacked that, they could give people morphine overdoses or all sorts of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And
so as we apply more, technologies into the system, there can be more vulnerabilities. You can mm-hmm. also say that. But without having those control technology, the still always the physical the area as a vulnerability as well. Mm-hmm. So it's some yes. hurdle we have to
like a lot of companies, their main breaches are from their employees answering questions on the phone or letting someone just follow them through the door because they don't check and make sure it's someone they know when they go through the pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's so much more awareness of how critical cybersecurity is to everybody at every level.
That's
where
right.
before, I don't think we were really thinking about it. So one thing, I was talking to one of your volunteers, one of your students, and I was asking him, so how do you like, the program and everything? And he said, oh, it's really great. I like it. And I said, well, why did you choose, computer science? He said, well, it's easier to get into computer science these days than it was before, because the way he was trying to explain it to me, if I'm understanding correctly, is that he was saying that you don't have to have a strong computer science background to get into computer programming now. Do you know, can you help me understand what he was trying to say? Because he was even getting to a specific language where...
Computer programming is a part of computer science.
Mm-hmm.
So without having computer science background...
He was trying to say that you don't have to know languages as much as you used to have to know. Like he was speaking specific... What's the latest language right now? Is Java or...
Java's been around for ages.
Is that the one? But I hope I wish I knew exactly.
Yeah, Java, Python, C++.
Python. Okay.
Yeah, everyone seems to love Python.
Yeah, and he was saying that.
Maybe he meant the programming
person.
Languages are.
Yeah, like everybody. It's always all easy. Right. It's easy.
Just like the computer has gotten a lot better in terms of the usability. Mm-hmm. We used to say computer illiterate a lot, but
right.
these days, everyone can use smartphone easily,
mm-hmm.
Not
tablets,
my mother,
right? So the usability has improved a lot, and right. programming languages as well. So the development environment uh-huh. as well as the language libraries, I think it's a lot easier to you know, do the task with less line of code, for okay. example, than so, before.
And when I was young, you could have to actually program specific registers and push information specifically into certain places. Particularly if you wanted to cheat at certain games, you could actually had to know exactly what register to cheat and fill. And some of the programming languages, you had to know exactly what registers you were addressing and things, and now everything's so much at a higher level.
Exactly, yeah. So you were referring to assembly language, mm-hmm. and the high-level language has become higher. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easier to deal with. But still, it's some system-level understanding. It's also very valued in industry.
When you were a kid, did you get computer magazines, and they had whole pages of machine code that you had to type in if you wanted to run their program, or... Were you lucky and missed that?
Machine code. My first programming language was called BASIC.
Yes, yeah. Mine too.
And then Pascal.
Uh-huh. I skipped Fancy. Pascal.
So,
Una, did you have an early computer language memory you wanted to share?
My first language was BASIC, then Fortran, then C and C++, and lots and lots of other things I've forgotten. But I do remember in the 1970s when computer magazines would print out basically machine code, and you would be typing in all of the hexadecimal code by hand in the hopes that you didn't make a mistype.
Five pages.
You would not miss one single character, otherwise nothing would work. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have to retype it again because you couldn't store it.
Or you could send them a check for £5 and they would send you a tape with them actually already on and correct. And I'm pretty sure that was why, because after you tried typing that umpteen times.
You had tapes. We'd use Key Punch.
Well, I think things have come a long way.
That's right.
Now I'm working with young kids in Coder Dojo, and they're able to select parts of statements that can, when they combine them, they can put together a programming code that can help them put out a broadcast to do a certain message or something. Mm-hmm. And is that just the way that things are going these days, where it's becoming a little bit more
right.
user-friendly?
Right, so for the elementary, students, there are languages mm-hmm. that is based on to graphical user interface. Mm-hmm. You can just drag and drop.
Right.
So the idea is that focusing on the logic rather than being tangled on the syntax.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's making it a little bit more accessible to more people then.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thinking of internet and things at schools, a friend who's a teacher, their internet went down at their school for about 3 days recently. And so
recently? 3 days?
Yes. Yeah. So so much of their stuff, all the children are issued with school-based, like iPads or tablets of some sort, but they're locked to the school system, so they can't get onto other networks and pick up viruses and things like that, hopefully. And so they didn't have any access on those. So they got to have a teaching experience of this is what the world was like before the internet.
That's
and another teaching moment is how dependent we are now on the internet.
Because before the internet, they would have had resources available for those lessons and things. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And that's a really great point. I mean, there are people who've just been born with this, and that's what that's what they know. Versus some of us who kind of have been trained into it over time. One thing, and that's, I think, something else that you've been focusing on, and that is helping to train individuals who may not have been born into the system, but who are maybe the type of learner that you describe yourself as, a what do you call yourself? As far as you want to learn forever.
Lifelong
learner. So we're getting lifelong learners who are coming out of different areas in life that you are beginning. I've seen, heard about you're assisting people in those areas. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right. I think you're referring to the project that I am planning with a team at KU and the KU Medical Center. And it is trying to help the women who were previously incarcerated and who are trying to re-enter the workforce. So we are trying to provide a STEM education for the underserved minority people. And the previously incarcerated women isn't the group that we find there is a growing demand, but it's very, you know, the underserved at the moment. So, that's where one of our passion, you know, the plan
How
is.
Did you
I was going to say, so you're actually directly teaching them, or is your study studying the best way to help them and to get them into the workforce?
Actually, both of them, right, yeah. So our collaborators at KU and KU Medical Center, they have a previous experience helping underserved minority, for example, the low-income seniors, and also the previously incarcerated women in terms of health information, and we are trying to provide the technology education to them. Right, and so there is the on-site, what we are planning, we are considering multiple modes of the education, and we are building the environment and also trying to find out what will be the most effective way to have an impact on their education and life, and hopefully be able to replicate it in other underserved, you know, minority groups too.
Are you building relationships and partnerships with companies? Because so many companies do the criminal background check and they automatically stop no matter what they turn up. Is there anything to get them beyond having the knowledge and into the workforce where they can use it?
What we are focusing on is a training the STEM education and potentially provide the potential, you know, the job places, right?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and I know there's organizations that are involved with outreaching and vetting formerly incarcerated individuals that are in the community now. So those are maybe some of the organizations that you might want to
be
involved with.
We would love to find out and do work together, right? Yeah.
I have a sneaking suspicion we could talk for at least another hour on this. We'll have to have them back as a partnership.
Yeah.
We are looking for, you know, partnerships to make the project really successful.
Exactly. What caused you to go in that direction? Was it meeting a certain individual with KU, or was it something you had heard about?
So I happened to talk to my friend and colleague at KU, and that's how I started into that. And as we discussed more for the project plan, I became very passionate on the program and really wished to make some positive impact on people, especially women with the previously privileged background. And we find that about 60% of those women are responsible for the primary care of young children under age 18. So educating them, empowering them will help not only them but also their children as
well. It's true, yeah. I think other people have realized that when you educate the woman, you educate the child, and that education extends to the community.
It raises the standard of living for the whole family and continues for generations. Mm-hmm. It's the most powerful place for change.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, it's really great to hear. Where are you currently in that process as far as reaching out?
So we are seeking, you know, the fundings from multiple places, primarily from National Science Foundation, and we plan to submit the proposal next month. We are also seeking the private fundings as well to make the program sustainable. Right.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're doing some really interesting things. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you're involved with at this time? That you can talk about briefly.
Yeah. No, nothing you sign non-disclosure agreements on or anything.
Well, just the technology is an exciting, you know, the area, and we are in an exciting time to make an impact to people really directly, I think, now. Yeah. Then the older time when it takes the long years of research, and we have to wait for long years to be used, commercialized in the society. But I think this is a time where we can make the cycle shorter and make an immediate impact to people. So.
I know one area that you are interested in is cryptography or
security. I'm not really improving security, the cryptography per se, but I'm using cryptography to build a secure system.
I see. Okay, and what types of things does that entail as far as using cryptography to build secure systems?
So there are many building blocks of the cryptography, and we consider, these days a lot of the research project that I am doing with my students, so we have a particular application in mind, and the around the application we are providing multiple levels of security.
Is that a higher level of security than is out there at present? Is this a type of a state-of-the-art type of thing?
So we are in the business of research. That means that we are pushing the state of art.
Pushing the limits.
Not just cutting edge, but onto bleeding edge.
Well, we do want to thank you once again, Dr. Choi, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been our pleasure having you here.
I'd like to ask an additional question.
Sure.
I know you're in the IEEE and various other organizations. Are you also a member of any of the local Kansas City organizations where you share information and encourage women into and other people into?
Exactly. So the IEEE is an international organization, but it also has a local chapter. The Kansas City local chapter was, in fact, a part of the local steering committee for this international conference. And the as far as I know, they are having monthly meetings, and I'm expecting to attend the meeting next month.
Do you know how, if anyone was interested in joining that to learn more about it, do you know how people could find it? Do you know the
IEEE? Yeah, www.IEEE.org. And if you know anyone who are the members of the IEEE.org, they can help you. What are the most relevant activities are happening?
And they can find information about the local Kansas chapter on the main national site, hopefully.
Good question. I don't remember the website exactly, but search, IEEE KC chapter.
If they can't search to find it, they're probably not tech-savvy enough to join.
And from a general standpoint, for women in engineering, there's also the Society of Women Engineers, of which I'm a member, which has a very large local organization, and you can find out more about them at swe.org, and I think the local org is swekc.org.
Okay. Great.
And you mentioned working with the CODA Dojo, so could you give some information on how people could find that, if they're interested?
Yeah, if you search right now, I'm not exactly sure of the website, but if you do search CODA Dojo KC, I believe it's codadojokc.org, but if you search CODA Dojo KC, you'll find it. Well, we just want to wrap things up. Once again, Dr. Choi, thank you so much for joining us today. You're doing some great and exciting things in smart cities, in network technology, and working with empowering women so that they can be involved in impacting our women and our families, you know, in Kansas City and around the world. So very glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also want to say thanks for joining us here on Every Woman. You're listening to 90.1 KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. We're so glad that you're joining us every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Just want to send out a shout out to Habitat KC. I know there's a special house blessing going on today, and we want to say congrats to the people involved with that. Kansas City, a lot's going on here, and we're really helping to make this a great place to not only visit, but a wonderful place to live. So thank you all for joining us today.